This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Kia ora, I'm Hugh, and you're listening to my quasi-weekly podcast, Hugh's Featured Tracks. This is a look back at the tracks that I've featured over the last week or so of morning shows on the Manawatu People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o Ngā Tangata o Manawatu. Without further ado, let's hear the first of those tracks. Let's kick the week off with some desert blues. This is a track from a band called Imarhan. Imarhan are an Algerian Tuareg desert rock quintet. There is a bit tied up in all of that terminology. So, Tuareg people are a large ethnic, large Berber ethnic group, traditionally nomadic pastoralists who principally inhabit the Sahara. So much from Wikipedia. The group who make up the band Imarhan, or as I say, from Algeria. And the fact that they're from Algeria means that there's sort of a bunch of like other historical elements that tie into the kind of music they play, the place that that occupies in the world, and the way that they're the way that their songs are sometimes titled and sung, things like that. So Algeria was a French colony, and France, while it was, you know, as horrible in its colonialism as the rest of Europe, did have the weird habit of just declaring that its colonial subjects were French. And so there's this odd persistence of like French language and French names that persist in Algeria to this day, because people with French surnames who were nonetheless Algerian-born occupied a politically difficult position and kind of were neither one thing nor the other as far as the government was concerned for a while. Anyway, Imarhan, according to an article that I have found about this record in particular, the name Imarhan relates to the concept of the ones I care about. So it's, you know, a reference to the closeness of the group as friends. And the kind of music that they play in Algeria is referred to as Tishomarin, which in another one of those sort of colonial history moments derives from a French term referring to unemployed people. So it was specifically the music of unemployed, usually young men who were displaced and wandering around in the 1970s. We now call this music something like desert blues often because it's a product of like the root music of what became blues once it hit America, re-encountering rock and roll, which of course derives from blues, and then taking influences back again. So there's this sort of intercontinental exchange over time that's happening as well. The track that I am going to play you is one of two singles that came out from this album that got videos. The album, incidentally, is called Esam, which means lightning, and it represents a sonic departure for the band in the sense that it involves a lot more integration of electronics, particularly modular synthesis. The previous records had been much more, I don't want to say traditional, because this kind of music is like a product of the last 50 years or so. This is not, you know, traditional music in the sense of folk handed down over generations. But it had relied on a lot more of what you might call traditional desert blues elements. So things like hand percussion and a particularly idiosyncratic or to a Western ear unusual approach to timing. Some of that stuff does still show up on this record, and it's really compelling because it's, like I say, it's like listening to the cousin of the blues. If you're familiar with the blues, there's a lot that seems familiar, but there's a lot that also seems really idiosyncratic. So it's like, I don't know, hearing the blues spoken in a different accent or something. Anyway, the track I'm going to play for you is the one which is probably the most straightforwardly rocky of the tunes on this record. Incidentally, if you want it, you can get all things Imarhan from imarhan.bandcamp.com. Right now, here is the tune I'm going to play you. It's the third track off the record, and it's called Talat. I featured the two advance singles for the new Backronger album, Red Sunset, and I said at that point that this is really a testament to the strength of Backronger as a songwriter and performer, because at the early point of her career, she had this moment where she was absolutely everywhere, and then kind of transitioned into this career as New Zealand pop royalty in waiting and sort of a side player on things like, you know, church tours with the Finns and that sort of thing. And so she could have gone into a career of, like, really consistent but not especially interesting adult contemporary music. And she has resisted doing that. You know, she did do all of the church tours with Dave Dobbin and the Finns, and she has released this album after, I think, 15 years of no new material from her. But that 15 years, she's spent building a studio and production partnership with her life as well as musical partner, Cody Nielsen. And so there's always been stuff going on, and the stuff that's been going on is always more interesting than you'd expect. She's also done interesting collaborative work, most notably for me at least, the duo King Sweeties with Cass Basil, bassist to lots and lots of people, but I first came across Cass Basil as part of Tiny Ruins. Just always, always more interesting than she needs to be. And I think that is, like I say, a mark of someone who's got something to say when they say it, when they don't really need to, if you see what I mean. Anyway, I'm going to play you a tune from the record, because the whole album is now out. If you want it, you can go and find it. It's an interesting mix. Based on the two advance singles, I was expecting things to be a bit stranger and more driving and synthy, but actually there's a balance here between that, and I suspect there's some influence from kind of classic French music. This album was recorded in Paris. Or if I was going to be cynical, a sort of nod to the kind of adult contemporary space that she could have just lived in full time if she really wanted to. And that balance and tension is kind of what makes it an interesting proposition. So I'm going to play you one of the more kind of chanteuse-y, adult contemporary-y songs off the record. Because I want to show the range as well as telling you that the thing is out. This tune is something which it's a kind of a classic dynamic, relationship dynamic explored in song, the one-sided conversation to the person who's refusing to connect to you. It's called "You're Never Really Here, Are You, Baby?"
You're never really here, are you, baby? The silence keeps me guessing for so long. You answer with the slowness of a mountain trapped in my arms. You never really know just what I'm saying. It's hard to tell a joke without a never really care, do you, baby?
I've expressed the opinion about movies that if you make like a giant smash hit, you should be allowed to do a weird one. You know, if you make the Disney Corporation $17 gigantillion by directing a Marvel movie, you should be able to make your, like, I don't know, your very own Zardoz, if you like. And I have the same opinion about music. I think if you are Andre Ice Cold 3000, then you get to make your instrumental jazz flute album. And if you are Flea, then you get to make Onora, which is what I am talking about. So, you know who Flea is. I don't need to tell you who Flea is. Flea is the Australian musician who is most famous as the bass player for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He has released a mostly instrumental jazz album called Onora, which, according to him, is named for a beloved family member. That's all he said about it. But the cover is a photo of a woman, and that woman is his Iranian mother-in-law, which I suspect gives you a hint as to who he might be referring to. So the question is then, given that Flea has undoubtedly earned the right to be as self-indulgent as he wants after having been the heart or part of the heart of the Red Hot Chili Peppers for, you know, a billion years in musician lifespans, the question is his big swing worth it? And I would say a pretty unmitigated success. I would say that I think the hidden secret of Flea is that even when he's being part of the Red Hot Chili Peppers and being outrageous and over the top, he's always kind of more tasteful than you think he is and more restrained than you think he is. He's, despite the fact that the Red Hot Chili Peppers are, you know, have the reputation of being this far out funky band, Flea's often doing something that's less complicated than it could be. And where what makes it work is that it's tasteful and that he's like made really good choices about what he's playing. Not that he, you know, cannot be a wild player, just that often if you listen to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, he's actually not. He's usually locking in something interesting. And Onora is absolutely that kind of album. The story behind it is that he was on the road with the Chili Peppers. He realized his 60th birthday was coming up fast. And so Flea decided to make a vow to himself to pick up the trumpet that I believe was actually his first instrument before he became a bass player. Practice every day for 2 years, and then make an album. And what he's done is parlay his celebrity status and access to, you know, enormous stars into basically cherry-picking the very best backing band producer and studio space that he could possibly get, and then putting them to the very best possible use. This could very easily have been like a self-indulgent ego trip of a thing. And no, it's consistently tasteful, interesting. The choices he's making are spot on. I think this is an absolute vindication of, you know, if you make a gazillion dollars making music for the masses, you should get to do a weird one, because some of the time you're going to get this record. It's really cool. The tune I'm going to play you is one of the two guest vocals. There is a version of Wichita Lineman on this record, which is fascinating. It's got Nick Cave absolutely going to town on the emotional core of the lyrics. It also doesn't really feel to me like it belongs on this record, and that's a sentiment I've seen echoed in other places. I'm going to play you the other vocal guest spot. This is an appearance from Tom York, of course, most famously of Radiohead, but also no stranger to making a gazillion dollars and then going off on your own to do a real weird one. And given how weird Radiohead has got while still being Radiohead, that's saying something. They worked together on a tune called Traffic Lights, which I believe is original for this record. Some of the things on here are covers, and some of them are original compositions by Flea and others. This feels to me like one of the original ones, and it's a real meeting of minds because they are both leaning into their own individual taste for the odd together, and I think the result is more than the sum of its parts. So here you go. This is Flea featuring Tom York from the record Onora, which, look, it's a thing that Flea put out. If you want to find it, you'll find it. Here's the tune Traffic Lights. Thank you. The last time I featured something from Grace Ives was when she put out her second record, Janky Star, back in 2022. She has just released a new album. It is called Girlfriend. According to Ives, it comes from what she describes as a true rock bottom period during which she had been drinking, lying, and hiding. Certainly it sounds like the kind of encounter that people can have with fame, particularly, I imagine, in the high-powered pop world. It can become very easy to not take care of oneself. This record comes, she describes it as being partly about her learning how to escape from escaping, and for her to figure out how to take up space and to experiment and push herself and to pursue new experiences without drugs and alcohol. All in all, the thing that strikes me about this is I've seen a couple of comparisons to Lorde's record Melodrama, and I definitely think that Grace Ives does belong to, I guess, a movement that I would describe as being in some ways like post-Lord, not in the sense that this is necessarily derivative, just that there's a kind of like pop girl DNA in here, which feels to me like it probably doesn't exist, or at least doesn't exist in the same shape without Lord. That said, Grace Ives is very much her own thing, and the thing that I'm enjoying about this record is the way in which she presents what would otherwise be really straightforward pop music. But it's like, you know, like looking at an old mirror where the silver's coming off the back of the glass. I would describe this as corroded pop or rusted pop. There are all of these moments where things are like filtered or distorted, and in a way that feels much less sort of artful than standard pop production. There is much, much stranger use of it. And if you look at the credits on the record, Grace Ives provides, as well as her vocals, of course, drum programming, general programming, synthesizers, mellotrons, a pump organ, a toy piano, a tack piano, what is just noted as animal sounds. You know, like there's a lot of weird impulses that have gone into this record, and I think that they have taken it in good places. Also, something to recommend it as a pop record, it is 36 minutes and 36 seconds long. For pop music, it is a virtue to not overstay your welcome. I am going to play you now the tune which there are a couple of tunes on here which get music videos, which means I am counting them as big singles. And this is the one of those, What I Can Play on the Morning Show. The other one has swears, and therefore I cannot. This is – I'm just going to go through Grace Ives' credits on here. She's credited on this one with – drum programming, there is a second drum programmer. General programming, there are two other general programmers. Synthesizer and guitar in addition to her vocal. Again, lots of weird stuff going on, and I like it. This is from the new Grace Ives record, Girlfriend. You can get it from graceives.bandcamp.com. This tune is called Trouble.
Yours and mine, I pray you look me in.
You've been listening to Hughes Featured Tracks, a quasi-weekly podcast put together from the tracks that I've featured over the last week or so of morning shows on Manawatu People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o Ngā Tangata o Manawatu. If you'd like to listen to the backlog of episodes for this podcast, you can find them along with all of our other locally made shows at our website, www.npr.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.